Morning is Harold Huggins versus the FNC. Mr. Gaston.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Paul Gaston, appearing on behalf of appellants, real estate appraisers. I have with me today Roy Percy, our co-counsel from Oxford, Mississippi. The case before you today presents an interesting issue of law related to the question of who may have prudential standing to bring a Lanham Act false advertising claim. The residential real estate appraisers who are appellants here are commercial entities engaged in the business of providing real estate appraisals to lenders, such as banks and other mortgage originators. They compete for business with other appraisers, of course, but also increasingly with providers of alternate valuation methods, companies which provide automated valuation models or companies which provide databases of information. FNC, appellee here, is one such company. FNC's main business is providing valuation services for lenders. We quote Mr. Rayburn, FNC's president, in our complaint as saying that he invented a process to turn collateral documents into data and that he has, quote, systems in big lenders that allow them to process mortgages a lot more efficiently. What we do is extract data during the process for collateral. That's our first line of business, close quote. That's what FNC was saying to lenders and other market participants, also within Mr. Rayburn's phraseology. What it was saying in its advertising to appraisers was very different. To them, it was saying, give us your data, give us your appraisals, and we will transmit to the lenders who commissioned you in a secure, private, and inviolate way. We won't touch the data. No one else will see it. We are only pipes for transmission. FNC, quote, has no access to your data, and it is not building a database with your appraisal data, close quote. Once again, that's Mr. Rayburn's words. But this was false. As Mr. Rayburn bragged, once again to a different audience, when an appraisal is transmitted to the lender, we are able to pop it open and suck all the data out and do that in a formatted way. Mr. Rayburn also said, FNC has developed a national collateral database where lenders and other market participants share their collateral data. The requirements for a Lanham Act false advertising claim are simple.
Can I ask you a question about the sort of the procedural posture of the case in part? You filed this case as a Lanham Act suit, and you had some common law fraud claims as well under 1367. What happened below is the Lanham Act case was knocked out, and you then, but left in place the district court retained jurisdiction over the common law claims, and then you dismissed them.
We'd voluntarily dismissed them, yes.
With prejudice.
Yes, with prejudice.
So, you know, accepting your factual allegations, you had a pretty straightforward civil fraud suit claim. And you opted to proceed with a Lanham Act claim, which does test the reach of the Lanham Act. Whether you're successful or not, it does push it in terms of, and you would, I think, agree with that. And my question is, why? I'm trying to understand what's really the dynamic of your lawsuit.
Sure. Your Honor, there were a number of strategic and tactical considerations.
Well, you have a class out there. You're purporting to represent a class.
We do, and we represented them, and we discussed it extensively with them, and they were completely on board with the course of action we chose. We felt the heart of this case was the Lanham Act false advertising. We also felt that as a class action, it would be very difficult to prove the individualized kind of reliance you had to prove.
I assumed my assumption was it was the class considerations that were a driver in part of that decision. I'm just trying to understand. Good, thank you. I don't want to pull you away from your argument.
It was in very large part because of that, and as I say, we discussed it extensively with the clients, and they were fully on board.
Do you agree that our questions of standing here are drawn would really control very much by the same principle that would control standing on the Clayton Act for Sherman Act violations, for example?
I think so, to a large extent. I mean, the Conti brothers case.
You're prepared to make your arguments under essentially the standard that the Third Circuit originally adopted, and then Judge Alito, the five-factor test. Is that correct?
Yes, no question. We agree that the five-factor test applies here as well, and the Fifth Circuit has expressly adopted that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anyway, the requirements for a Lanham Act false advertising claim on their face are very simple. Under the plain language of the statute, such a claim can be brought against any person who in commercial advertising or promotion misrepresents the nature, characteristics, or qualities of his or her or another person's good services or commercial activities. And such a person, quote, shall be liable in a civil action by any person who believes that he or she is likely to be damaged by such act. Now, that plain language is so clear and it's very plain on its face that it applies to appraisers here. Nonetheless, we concede that courts have developed certain limitations on that plain language, which...
Well, let me ask you, would you articulate for us precisely the false statements that are made that you rely upon?
Yes, Your Honor. The false statements were all the statements that... FNC made to appraisers or in its advertising on its website saying, entrust us your data for transmission. We won't touch it. We won't look at it. We won't use it. And those all were false. And that was on their website, broadcast to anybody who cared to look at it.
So those false statements were made to customers?
Well, they were customers as well as competitors. I mean,
they didn't know they were competitors, did they?
Well, FNC certainly knew that they were competitors. The people who were duped into providing the data may not have known at that time,
right,
initially, but after a little while, they began to realize that, yes.
What was the gap between the gathering of the information and the competition?
Well, I don't think there was much of a gap at all. These advertisements or false representations were on the website until 2007. Mr. Rayburn was already quoted as crowing about what a great system he has in place in 2005. So there was at least that two-year overlap when it was clear that FNC was using the data to compete with the appraisers. And so there was no gap for those 2 years. There was a complete overlap.
So it was readily apparent from the website?
The only thing that was apparent from the website to the appraisers was that they would be assured complete confidentiality of their data and nobody would use it. We found out, and the appraisers eventually found out, because Mr. Rayburn was quoted in various industry magazines as saying, yeah, and we're taking that data and we're sucking it out and we're using it to create a competing database. So there was, you know, exactly when each individual plaintiff realized that, I can't tell you at this moment, but there was at least a two-year period during which Mr. Rayburn was already on record as saying, we're using that data, and during which he was still on his website saying, your data is untouched, inviolate.
And during that time period, was additional data released to him?
Well, additional data, yes, absolutely. This was an ongoing business, and appraisers were continuing to provide their appraisals through what they...
Even though there was a public statement that he had this new...
Well, not all of them heard about it. Not all of them knew about it. In fact, quite a few of them did not know about it. So anyway, the basics of the Lanham Act claim on its plain language are clear. Now, courts, including this court, have developed prudential standing requirements which limit who can bring such a claim. And the Conti Brothers Court said, the doctrine of prudential standing limits jurisdiction as a matter of court's self-governance. It serves to avoid deciding questions of broad social impact where no individual rights would be vindicated and to limit access to the federal courts to those litigants best suited to assert a particular claim. Well, I would say that here there is no question that there are no broad social impact questions, and there are individual rights that need to be vindicated, and there is no question that these litigants are the ones best suited to assert the particular claim that they have asserted, which is also the same essentially as the third factor in the Conte brothers test. I guess a simple way to look at it is to say that courts say to themselves, we are busy enough, we can't open our doors to every Tom, Dick, or Harry who feels wronged by a false advertising claim, even though the plain language would support such an interpretation. In fact, most courts have held that if you're a plain consumer, if you buy toothpaste based on toothpaste manufacturer A's representation, buy our toothpaste, use it, you'll never get another cavity, and you find after using the toothpaste you do get another cavity, well, you as a consumer don't have the kind of commercial or competitive interest that allows you to bring a claim. That's not our case. Although these representations were made to our clients in their capacity as users of FNC's appraisal court service, the end result was that they were disadvantaged competitively in their commercial enterprise. And the reason for that is because FNC used their data, contrary to their representations, to build a huge database that appraisers could not compete, or could compete against, but that nonetheless sucked business away from them. If a bank can go to a database at a much lower cost to determine the appropriate valuation of residential real estate, why would it pay $400 or $450 to
What would you do with a fact pattern like the Joint Stock Society case, Smirnoff misrepresentation? You have one importer of Russian vodka, and the competitor of the importer starts to sell vodka and misrepresents that it's from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And the Third Circuit said that plaintiff's injury was too indirect to support standing.
Well, how
do you distinguish that result?
I'm not sure exactly what the factors were the court looked at, but it could well be that in that case, competitor could not show that he would have picked up those same sales that he lost as a result of the misrepresentation.
Well, they just said that the plaintiff's alleged injury was too indirect. So it goes off on standing, but it focuses on the directness of the injury. The misrepresentation was to consumers by the competitor was as to the source of product. Presumably, vodka that's imported from Russia is more likely to be better for people who want Russian vodka than their own product. And so they were disadvantaged in that regard. I mean, they don't have the importation expenses, et cetera, et cetera. But yet that was too indirect.
Well, if that's so, I believe that case was wrongly decided, Your Honor, because I do think it's the classic case where lies are made about a particular product to a consumer, it disadvantages another producer, and I think in 99 out of 100 cases that I've seen and that I've read decided on that issue, the standing has not even been questioned.
Before you run out of time, would you address the damages component of your claim? It seems to me you're relying on the defendant's profits as opposed to losses that you can actually document.
Not entirely, Your Honor. We do feel that that is a legitimate basis, certainly, to assess damages in a Lanham Act claim. But we do feel that we can show, if with a proper market analysis conducted by an economics expert, which looks at the total market for real estate valuations and real estate appraisals, and then looks at the trend over time when FNC enters that market with its database product and shows how the market share has diminished for appraisals, I think a market analysis like that by an economics expert will show within a reasonable degree of certainty that there was significant damage to plaintiffs.
So you would have someone identify your shrinking market. From your briefing, I thought you were going to rely on the profits.
Well, we would do both. We would certainly want to show that there has been damage and that we've lost business, and I think we can show it, and I was giving you an illustration of how we might do that, but we would also, depending on the numbers and how it goes, go for the profits as well.
Okay, thank you. You'll save some time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Matthew Previn for Appellee FNC, Inc. This court has made clear numerous times that prudential standing under the Lanham Act is limited. It is not coextensive with Article III jurisdiction. The court stated in the Procter & Gamble case that the Lanham Act evidences an intent to limit standing to a narrow class of plaintiffs, possessing interests, the protection of which furthers the purposes of the Act. I'd like to go over a few preliminary principles this court and other circuits have articulated when evaluating prudential standing. First, the focus of the statute is on anti-competitive conduct. The statute was enacted to protect originally against misleading use of another's trademark. That's, of course, the primary purpose for the Lanham Act. The principal purpose of the false advertising claim under the Lanham Act is preventing the diversion of goodwill and reputation from those who created them to others. The classic example of this is a party saying, don't buy our competitors' products because they don't work, buy ours instead. The false advertising Section 43 of the Lanham Act claim is not, and this is critical, it is not a federal anti-fraud statute. It's not intended to provide standing based on, and here I'll quote from this court's Procter & Gamble decision, based on a competitor's fraudulent act in running its business that gives it an advantage. Finally, as appellants concede, consumers, users of products and services, lack standing to bring a claim. The claim must be brought by a competitor. So, where does that leave us in this case? Plaintiffs, we submit, are seeking to convert what should be a simple state law fraud or fraudulent inducement claim into a Lanham Act claim. At bottom, they claim they were fraudulently induced to use a service, AppraisalPort, and were injured as a result. That's a fraud claim. It's clearly impermissible under this court's Lanham Act case law. It would increase litigation in federal courts by providing a federal fraud statute and would not serve the underlying purposes of the Lanham Act.
Why is it also akin to misappropriation of trade secrets and use of that to unfairly compete with your competitors? And you're taking their very own product and using it to compete against them.
Well, Your Honor, they may have a state law conversion claim, and indeed they pleaded a state law conversion claim, which they subsequently dismissed with prejudice. But that's not a Section 43 false advertising claim. I think the prudential standing case law is quite clear on the rather limited scope of Section 43 and a desire not to open this up to litigants seeking a federal cause of action for conversion.
I don't think that was, it may not have been actually contemplated, but it seems like it falls within the parameters and it's one step worse. In other words, they're not just falsely advertising something that harms their competitors, they've made a false advertisement that harms. They're misappropriating their very own competitor's product to compete against them with. I mean.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think they're misappropriating their competitors' products. I mean,
how are they not?
Well, I think, Your Honor, I think it's important to distinguish between the AppraisalPort service and the National Collateral Database. Those are two entirely distinct services provided by FNC.
But FNC is the only actor, and that you know, we don't have an independent intervener. We have in some of these other cases from our circuit, certainly. The FNC is the one who misappropriated, and they're the So they're the one that filed the direct injury. You know, the allegation is FNC's national collateral database offering reduces the need for new or additional appraisal for real estate and causes third parties to use the national collateral database, oftentimes in lieu of residential appraisal services offered by the plaintiffs. Now, that appears to be an allegation of injury to their own competitive interest and an injury that's not derivative of injury to some other party. That cannot be said of Procter & Gamble and these other cases.
Your Honor, well, I think the case law is quite clear that it's not sufficient simply to allege that you're a competitor and that you were injured as a result of fraudulent statements. More is required under the prudential standing case.
Your voice dropped. I couldn't hear.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think it's not sufficient under the case law to allege that you are a competitor and that you were injured as a result of a fraudulent statement in advertising. More is required. You have to have been injured in a way contemplated under the Lanham Act. And I think here the statements were made to the plaintiffs in their capacity as users of appraisal court, not in their capacity as potential competitors down the road for a collateral database.
You say that, but why is that so? I mean, they don't have different shirts they wear. They're the same entity. They're a potential competitor, and you make it to them, and you say, well, that's speaking only to the left side of your ear. I don't understand that. I understand the distinction in law, but I don't understand it factually here. What?
Well, Your Honor, they have...
We only defraud them in that capacity and not in another capacity. It's the same bunch of people.
And FNC must have thought they were potential competitors because that's why they were gathering the information and using it against them. What else needs to be established?
Well, Your Honor, I think, Your Honor, they have different customer bases. The customers of appraisal port are the appraisers. The customers of the National Collateral Database are the lenders. They're not competing for
lenders who need the appraisals.
Lenders who need the appraisals.
You can get them now in a much more financially attractive way from your client rather than from your client's customers.
Well,
now competitors.
Certainly, we wouldn't concede that, but for purposes of the motion to dismiss, there would be a factual dispute as to that. The National Collateral Database includes much publicly available data, only a small portion of which is information extracted from the appraisals submitted via appraisal port. I think, Your Honor, at bottom, those are not false advertising claims under the Lanham Act. They may state viable state law claims, either for conversion or fraud or fraudulent inducement, but I don't think they're cognizable Lanham Act claims.
What?
I don't think it's the type of injury that Congress sought to redress under the statute.
I understand all of you, but why?
The typical Lanham Act case, Your Honor, is don't buy their products, buy ours instead because theirs don't work or ours work better, something like that. That's beyond mere puffery. There has to be, as both Conte Brothers and the Procter & Gamble decision emphasize, there has to be an injury to the goodwill or reputation of a competitor. We don't have that here. There's no allegation that the plaintiff's appraisals don't work sufficiently or the National Collateral Database works better. If the misstatements or misrepresentations that plaintiffs were challenging here were misrepresentations about the quality of plaintiffs' appraisals as compared to the National Collateral Database, perhaps that would state a viable claim under the Lanham Act. That's not what we have here. These are statements that they allege induced them to use the appraisal port. That's a very different scenario. as the district court recognized.
So you maintain that there is a zone of cases in which there is Article III standing, meeting all the requirements for Article III standing, but do not have standing under the Lanham Act?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And you say you come within that zone because this is, quote, not the type protected by it. And I understand that language, but the Lanham Act is interpreted so broadly now that that I'm not clear exactly where you draw the line between those two, and it doesn't really advance the discussion just to say, well, it doesn't, because this is not the type they're talking about, they contemplate.
Well, Your Honor, I think I would look to injury to reputation and goodwill that the Procter & Gamble decision, drawing from Conte Brothers, emphasizes that as a critical component of stating a Lanham Act claim. I'm sorry, not stating a claim, but establishing prudential standing. I don't think there's any way in which one could conclude that there was such an injury to reputation or goodwill here. The misrepresentations were made to the appraisers, not to the lenders, who ultimately would make a decision as to which product to use. And in that sense, the statements were made to users, not to competitors. The misrepresentations were not anti-competitive in the traditional sense of a Lanham Act claim. The relevant inquiry we would submit is the relationship of the parties as it pertains to the challenged misstatements. And here, the misstatements were made to the plaintiffs, appellants, as simply as users of.
Give us your data, and we will keep it confidential. And so forth. Basically, and then you take the data and jump into competition with them. I mean, that's the allegation.
That's the allegation, Your Honor. And just as we would, as a factual matter, we will argue that stating that the data will be secure refers to the security of the transmission. Not to ultimately who will use it.
We won't let anybody else have it. We can use it.
We're going to give it to them.
I hope you can sell that distinction to a jury, because what that says is we can have your data. We're going to protect it. Don't worry. We won't let anybody steal it. We're going to use it.
Well, Your Honor, I think at bottom what this suggests.
Legalism's not going to fly, because it's all that is a legalism. It puts a different little dressing on what's just flat-out fraud. Under the allegation, I'm not saying you committed fraud, because I don't know what happened, but I'm just going, but this is a 12B6 dismissal.
Yes, Your Honor. All I'm saying is that these allegations should be state law claims. This should not be a federal cause of action. These are simply fraud, fraudulent inducement, maybe conversion, the claims that they pleaded in this case but voluntarily dismissed. The fact that they may have been wronged doesn't mean they get standing to bring a federal Lanham Act claim.
Well, you're much better off defending fraud claims, because you've got a class action out there. And so I understand why it's really unusual to have people arguing, well, gee, we may have defrauded them, but we didn't violate the Lanham Act. You say, well, why in the world would you be conceding virtually that you have a fraud claim? And the answer is because that way you can turn around and defeat the class action.
Well, to be clear, Your Honor, I'm certainly not conceding they've stated a fraud claim.
Oh, I know. Okay.
I'm simply saying that these claims should have been brought and were initially brought as state law claims, but were subsequently dismissed by the plaintiffs. The district court, as this court knows, found that properly considered the correct test, Judge Alito's Conte Brothers test, and concluded that four of the five factors weighed against prudential standing. The first factor, of course, is the nature of the plaintiff's alleged injury. I believe we've essentially gone over that now, I won't repeat that. Those factors that we submit weigh against prudential standing, but most critically, I think, again, is the fact that these alleged misrepresentations did not go to the comparing of the National Collateral Database to appraisal port. That's what a traditional Lanham Act claim.
Well, so the you have customers out there that are under the allegations that are moving to you from them, and those customers are not being told under these allegations that you are utilizing information that was fraudulently obtained. So that moves it back into almost a classic Lanham Act violation, doesn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I misunderstood the question.
You misunderstood the question?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Well, going back to damaging goodwill, I mean, you're essentially taking their very own product and telling the same customers that we've got their product and we can get it to you cheaper. In other words, you're harming their goodwill because you're not just disparaging their product. You have actually stolen their product under the allegations and are now saying, I can give you their product cheaper.
Well, Your Honor, there are lots of cases declining to find prudential standing involving competitors who were injured as a result of challenged misstatements. That alone is not sufficient to establish standing under the Lanham Act. More is necessary. This court has made very
clear. This isn't just a misstatement. I mean, you talk about damage to goodwill. You have taken their very own product and are saying to their competitors, we've got their product and we can get it to you cheaper. Their very own product. We can provide it to you cheaper.
Well, that's not an allegation in the complaint. To be clear, the challenge statements by FNC did not involve that kind of a representation. But
you are representing this data, obviously, to your customers as being data that you have properly a right to utilize and to offer to them. That service you offered, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. If their allegations are sound, that's false, isn't it not? If their allegations are sound, I understand you're in an unhappy position of facing a 12B6, where we have to assume for now that their allegations are well taken, they can prove them. It's the same question I asked you before. I guess you still don't understand the question. Have you thought of an answer?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Could you?
No, I won't repeat it. It's very straightforward, and you basically are saying that this is an indirect injury under this act. And what I'm saying to you, under these allegations that are made here, you defrauded these people, you took their information, you're not entitled to use it. It's not yours, it's stolen property, it's IP. And you are then using that and selling to other customers, and you are effectively representing by your sales to them that you are entitled to do that. And so why isn't that a misrepresentation to consumers that are taking away custom to these other competitors? I mean, I must be missing something on that.
Well, Your Honor, misrepresentations to consumers.
The consumers don't have the action.
Correct.
You are misleading the customers that this is your data rather than your competitor's data. Take an example. I used a case, gave an example many years ago. I tried as a lawyer, a company called Bonds, okay? Classic Lanham Act case. Bonds department store. A man named Bonds comes along and opens a store. And it's a resale, you know, outlet kind of thing. Well, they advertise Bonds outlet stores. It's a business moves over there. And Bond says, hey, you know, you ain't Bonds. He says, well, my name's Bonds. So, but it what happens is the misrepresentation to the consumers is actionable by the competitor, right?
Well, in your example, it's not clear to me what the if that's a false advertising claim or a misappropriation of a trademark claim, which is of course different. But the
well, I guess we screwed it up. We tried it as a 49A Lanham Act case and won, but. It's not my personal involvement. It's just I'm trying to get a fact pattern that's very straightforward. A competitor misrepresents the source of data. This I'm suggesting to you that another allegation. Now you challenge it, please. If you don't have a right to this data and you took it from the competitor, you by selling to these other people, the suggestion is are obviously representing to them that you have a right to do that. Or is it that you don't defraud them by remaining silent or something?
No, Your Honor. First of all, we absolutely do not.
I know you deny.
No, I'm saying the ownership of the underlying data we would dispute. We would submit that we own that data, but that's a separate collateral issue. I don't think those kinds of representations about ownership made to a user of a product translate into a Lanham Act claim. I think that's a...
Well, you don't think that, but tell me why legally.
That's a fraudulent inducement claim. That's not an advertisement made to that a competitor has a cause of action to bring. That's a...
Your representation... I understand your answer.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Gosling, you have a few minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to start focusing on the goodwill and reputation element, and I'd like to start also by quoting from page 13 of Appellee's brief, Mr. Previn's brief, and here he is quoting from the lower court's opinion and from Procter & Gamble. As the district court correctly noted, the focus of the Lanham Act is on vindicating commercial interests that have been harmed by a competitor's false advertising. And there's more, but let's just stop there. What part of this case doesn't fit that focus? The focus of the Lanham Act is on vindicating commercial interests that have been harmed by a competitor's false advertising. We have commercial interests. They've been harmed by competitors' false advertising. And I continue the quote, securing to the business community the advantages of reputation and goodwill by preventing their diversion from those who have created them to those who have not. Once again, I think we fit that standard beautifully. It was, in this case, it wasn't only our goodwill and reputation that was diverted, it was our actual work product. Our client's actual work product, but it was also their goodwill and reputation, because the reason people go to appraisers, real live human being appraisers, to appraise real estate is because they know that appraiser will go out there, inspect the premises, he will report on recent renovations, recent damage, the condition of the premises, things that no database can do, and in general, in the past, before FNC came along, such databases existed, but they were gleaned from public records, from county tax records and the like, and they just weren't that reliable. They were out of date. They weren't updated. Nobody had actually gone out to look at the property. So there was a clear distinction between getting your data from a database or an automated valuation model and getting a seasoned judgment from an appraiser who actually went out and looked at the property.
That prior database was just a listing of comparables from sales.
Right? Yeah, which may or may not be useful for certain purposes, right. But it's not the
not
kind of serious competition for our clients, the appraisers. However, when you take the appraiser's own recent work, when they go out and they eyeball the property and they assess whether or not it was recently renovated, recently damaged, subject to hurricane damage, whatever, that is a very valuable thing. And that is their goodwill, and that is their reputation, the fact that everybody knows when you hire an appraiser, he does that. Now, when you suck the data out of the actual appraisal that he makes and you build a database using that data, then you have taken, you have diverted their goodwill and reputation. Because as Mr. Rayburn was crowing to his audience of lenders and people who might buy his services, yes, they use that very real data from the appraisals, and therefore it's very reliable, and therefore it can compete with the appraisers themselves. On the point,
I know this isn't in the record, it's sort of an aside, but have the appraisers stopped using this data port?
Many of them have. Many of, certainly our clients, many of them have. Some have not, and part of the reason for that is they do get referrals from signing up for the, and they have to kind of weigh the advantage of that versus the disadvantage of having their work taken without their permission. And some still don't even know that. Some still don't realize that. I mean, there's a wide group out there. The Procter & Gamble case, I don't think it's at all comparable there. The allegation by Procter & Gamble was that Amway misled its own distributors. It's nothing like this case. It's basically saying, you know, you misled your own employees, and therefore we were somehow vaguely harmed. I think it's very understandable that the court denied Procter & Gamble prudential standing in that case. And finally, what I want to say is that I think very few people would question the centrality of the Lanham Act to our case if it simply involved misrepresentations made to third parties, to uninvolved third parties. But my contention is, and therefore we were disadvantaged because those misrepresentations were made to third parties. My contention is, if our clients were disadvantaged because the misrepresentations were made to them, and they were competitively disadvantaged and commercially disadvantaged, why should the analysis be any different? In fact, it's even more direct. The injury is even more direct. And I think it's kind of a red herring to talk about, well, we might have had state law claims or might have had other claims. The central part of our claim has always been Lanham Act, and we believe we have a very valid and strong Lanham Act claim.
All right. Thank you, sir. Wherever you are.
Thank you.